I'm going to begin with a few words about Back to Godhead. In the this book, Pioneer Years, which is a collection of Srila Prabhupada's early BTGs, 1944 to 1960, it's not complete, but whatever it was, devotees were able to find. So the opening page of this book, it says, Back to Godhead, an instrument for training the mind and educating human nature to rise up to the plane of the soul spirit. I was quoting that recently in a class. And then it says, first appearance on the Vyas Puja Day, 1944. Edited and founded under the direct order of His Divine Grace, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada, by Abhay Charande. Prabhupada was initiated, but he was still using his birth name. And then there's contents page. This, I don't know why this is printed like this exactly. I'm not sure if it came out like this, but it says parts 1, 2, 3, and 4. Then the publisher is given here, Thakur Spink and Company, 1933 Limited, 3 Esplanade, Calcutta. I don't know if Prabhupada published four volumes at one time. In any case, so in the next page, in the contents page, it also has another slogan, you can say, it says, we have to drive away tyranny in the realm of thought and create a will for world peace. I think probably quoted that from someone, or someone said that during the war. We have to defeat tyranny in the realm of thought and create a will for world peace. Back to Godhead will be published part by part as papers are available. Remember, knowing the Leelamrita, Prabhupada couldn't get paper. He had to fight like anything because it was wartime, so everything was rationed. So he had to really, it was so hard for Prabhupada to launch this magazine. And he called it, as I mentioned this morning, he said it was the beginning of his spiritual life. And we can take from that, of course, Prabhupada was, his spiritual life began at birth, but his actual, you can say, active service in pursuit of the order of his spiritual master to preach to the English-speaking world, this was the first thing that he did, was he launched Back to Godhead magazine in 1944. Then the price is given here. It says 0-10-0 rupees. Now, I don't know if that means a tenth of a rupee, or probably it's what it means. Or 1.5 shillings. I don't know what that is either. And then editor's office, Sita Kanta, Banerjee Lane, Calcutta. And then Prabhupada opens it with a message of His Divine Grace. His Divine Grace, Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, the celebrated Acharya, spiritual head of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, spoke the following few lines as his message just a few days, 23rd December 1936, before his passing away from this mortal world. So I won't read that. It's a couple pages long, but in the end it says, translated from Bengali by the editor. I'll just read the last paragraph here. So this is just before his passing. We have no love or hatred for anyone in this world. All arrangements made in this world are but temporary. There is, therefore, unavoidable necessity for that ultimate need for everyone in this world. You should attain the transcendental loving service of the objective, being situated in concerted action for that one aim. Let there be a constant flow of the ideas and thoughts as conceived by Rupa Goswami and his followers. We shall not at any time show our slightest dejection for the seven-tongued Sankirtan movement. This refers to the first verse, Cheto Darpanam Arjanam. It gives seven benedictions, basically. That's what the seven-tongued Sankirtan movement refers to. If we have undaunted faith in it, we shall then only achieve all perfections. You should all, therefore, preach with fearlessness And with utmost energy, the message of Rupa and Raghunath under the guidance of the followers of Sri Rupa. That's the end of it. So this idea, preaching the message of Godhead, is very prominent, of course, in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Of course, it wasn't before him. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, so he picked it up from him. But he especially emphasized it. And, of course, our Srila Prabhupada emphasized it like anything. I'm always impressed, even when I read from the earliest, or listen to Prabhupada's lectures, even 26 Second Avenue, New York City, he's telling the devotees to preach. They don't know anything, basically. They're just off the street, practically. And he's telling them, you have to preach, you have to spread this all over the world, and so on. I was just reading a paper, you know, there's a whole debate about female initiating spiritual masters, Vaishnavi Diksha Gurus. So I was reading a paper on it, and one a devotee was quoting Prabhupada saying everyone should be guru. He was really emphatic about it, actually. All of you become guru, become spiritual masters. In one place he said, so now we have 100, then we'll have 1,000, and then 10,000, and then it keeps expanding the number. I was thinking of multi-level marketing, you know, how it spreads out. Everybody makes some. So he wanted everyone to be a guru. That was especially Prabhupada's mood. He was so much into preaching. So in that mood also, of course, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was encouraging. He long wanted someone to go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness. He sent disciples to Germany and also to England to see what they could do there, spread Krishna consciousness. And he didn't like people just chanting all day long, Nirjan Bhajan. So he's going to read this. There's this song that he wrote, which probably would quote sometimes, a line or two from it, Dushtaman, called Vaishnava K, which means, what kind of Vaishnava are you? Jayapataka Maharaj wrote a whole book on this, commentary on this. It's 19 verses. So I'm just going to go through the translations of it. I think this may be a quote from Prabhupada. I get this from ISKCON Desire Tree. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has written a song, Dushtaman. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur states that our mind is always wandering here and there and is not constant. We should focus our mind only on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna and should not think about women and wealth, material desires. So it begins, Dushtaman tumi kisher Vaishnava Patishtara tare nirjanera kare tava harinama ki kevala kaito. So Prabhupada would quote this line and other lines in this song, we'll see. So this is the first verse. I won't read through all of Bengali, 19 verses. The translation of this is, oh, wicked mind, what kind of Vaishnava do you think you are? Now, I don't know whose translation this is, unfortunately. I don't know if this is Jayapataka Maharaj's translation, whose translation it is. Oh, wicked mind, what kind of Vaishnava do you think you are? Your pretentious show of chanting Lord Hari's holy name in a solitary place is only for the sake of attaining the false prestige of a worldly reputation. It is nothing but pure hypocrisy. So this is a device that's often used by Vaishnavas where they preach their own mind, which we probably should do a little more of ourselves, at least I should. So he's preaching to his wicked mind. As soon as I read this about chanting in a solitary place, well, of course I've heard this many times, but I was thinking how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur did that himself, of course. But you could say, well, he was preparing for his preaching mission. One thing, I recently read a book on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It's published some years ago by Mandala Palace Press. Quite a nice book, big coffee table book. So, what point was I going to make about that? I'm sorry, getting old.
Wicked mind, solitary,
budget. Oh, I know what, yeah, they were talking there. There were some, because there are remembrances in that book from disciples of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And they were talking about how he was just sitting there all day long, just chanting, day and night, just chanting in this, not exactly a solitary place, it was in Mayapur. And devotees were able to see him. Oh, I know what it was. I really get the impression here, you see it, how austere and what a devotee he was. As you might say, as a sadhaka. What kind of a sadhaka he was. Like he followed Chaturmasya, all 4 months of it, not just Damodar month, all 4 months of it, where you eat unspiced khichdi. Try doing that for 4 months. And I, you know, when I read it, I was thinking, well, he's a Nitya Siddha. He doesn't need to do this. But I was thinking, well, maybe that's why he could do it, because he's a Nitya Siddha. But he really had this. He was so austere. You know, his spiritual master said that I see the renunciation of Rupa Raghunath. Is that what he said? In my Prabhu. He used to call him my Prabhu. He used to call Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Gorkhasura Das Babaji would call his disciple my Prabhu, my master, because he saw these amazing qualities in him. So he was so austere. Now, you know, he took a vow to chant, whatever it was, a billion rounds or something like that, or a billion names, something. And I think you do the calculations, but it takes something like 9 years. But during that period, he was tutoring the children of the king of, what was the name of that state, Tripura or something? And I was thinking about, how did he do that? I don't know how he did both at the same time. Of course, we always wonder about Haridas Thakur, too. He was chanting, 192 rounds, but he was going out preaching with Nityananda and meeting Jagai and Madhai at the same time. So, of course, we know they didn't eat and they didn't sleep. So they had plenty of time. But you really see this in Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He was so dedicated. And like I said, his spiritual master and his father, of course, his spiritual master was a Babaji, and he was only sitting to chant. Well, not only, of course, he was in prema. He was preaching in another way. But he told him, you're a preacher, you should preach. Whereas in the beginning, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was such a genius, he was appointed the chair of Calcutta University in Sanskrit at a young age. So he saw his life was kind of going in a you might call a materialistic trajectory. You know, if I keep this up, then somebody, I'll have to get married and forget it. And at some point, he just gave it all up. And he became, completely absorbed in the mission of spreading Lord Chaitanya's movement. So when I read this, I think maybe he's telling himself, you should be a preacher. You shouldn't just chant all day long. Or, of course, at the same time, he's criticizing those who do that, which it seems to be the main thread that runs through this, that there are others who this is, there are a lot of, we know during that time, there are a lot of, you might say, cheap Babajis. We know the problem Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur himself had with those who wanted to drag the body of Gorkhasura Das Babaji Maharaj through the streets of Navadvip. He wouldn't allow them to do it. He proved that he was the only real disciple. So anyway, this is how the song begins. Oh, wicked mind, what kind of Vaishnava do you think you are? Your pretentious show of chanting Lord Hari's holy name in a solitary place is only for the sake of attaining the false prestige of worldly reputation. It is nothing but pure hypocrisy. So we might think, wow, someone is chanting all day long. That's pretty amazing. But we don't have the vision necessarily to see. I was just hearing one devotee was explaining that sometimes they are, in India, of course, people have respect for people who seem to be paramahamsas. And sometimes they're really not. They're just, they're intoxicated. They're living on the street naked or whatever. But sometimes people go to them, ordinary people, and they think, well, I can get something special from this person. So what they do, they try to get numbers from them that they can use in the lot to bet on the lottery. They go to one of these people they think is some paramahamsa, say, give me some numbers. Of course, the guy's just some drunken stupor. He's not even advanced, But of course, there are real personalities like that. But for us, sometimes it's hard to determine. We hear it in the Shastra, like, people, when they saw Rishabhdev, for example, they just thought he was some crazy person. And there are others like that, too. So, as they say, it takes one to know one. So you have to be in an elevated position to be able to make the discrimination. So the second verse, such materialistic prestige. Now, he has a nice language here. Such materialistic prestige is as disgusting as the stool of a hog. So stool is disgusting, but the stool of a hog is doubly disgusting again, because hogs are so disgusting themselves. It's like the example of it, I sometimes give it the dwarf trying to touch the moon. Well, nobody can touch the moon, but somehow the dwarf tries to do it. It sounds even more ridiculous. Do you not know that it is only a mere illusion cast by the potency of Maya? That material prestige, he's saying. Everyone wants prestige. What is the value of contemplating day and night your plans for enjoying wealth and women? All these things are only temporary. When you claim wealth as your own, it creates your ever-increasing desires for material enjoyment. Your riches should be used to serve Madhava, the Lord of all wealth. Madhava, ma here means Lakshmi, and dava means the husband, so the husband of the goddess of fortune, Madhava, the Lord of wealth. So all wealth should be used for the Lord of wealth. Lakshmi should be used in the service of Narayana. Neither is it your proper place to indulge in lust for women, whose only true proprietor is your Lord Yadava. So of course this also was going on, is still going on. I mentioned before I spent some months in Rishikesh, and the devotee I was with, he would meet with different people. Of course, they were talking in Hindi. I never could understand what they were talking about. But a lot of times, they were talking about this Baba and that Baba and how he had so many women and so on. So a lot of nonsense going on like that. That's what Prabhupada talks about, how the women go to sadhus because they think if I have a child by this sadhu, then I'll, you know, be a great, it'll be a great soul. But so there are men who go dress up as sadhus to like entice women. So verse number 4, the demon Ravana, lust incarnate. This is, what it said here. I'll look at the Bengali a few times. Oh, no, no. Maybe I got the number wrong. Anyway, the demon Ravana, lust incarnate, fought with Lord Ramchandra, love incarnate, in order to gain the tree of worldly reputation. But that oasis turned out to be but a mirage cast in the desert wasteland of the Lord's illusory material potency. He wanted worldly reputation. Again, what he's talking about. Please cultivate fixed determination to attain only the steady and solid platform whereupon a Vaishnava ever stands. If you neglect worshipping the Lord from this position, then you will ultimately attain a hellish existence. Why do you needlessly suffer the torment of blaspheming the devotees of Lord Hari? Of course, this happens too. Those who are hypocrites and fakes, they blaspheme the real devotees. Even in regard to preaching, people think, no, you just should stay here, perform nirjan bhajan, don't go anywhere, don't preach to others, don't go out there into this hellish material world. You know, there was the old superstition that a sannyasi should never cross the ocean. It seems the idea there was that because you'll get contaminated in mlecha desh, you go among those mlechas and yavanas, then your vratas and so on will be ruined by their association. So they would sometimes criticize, oh, you're going there, you know, they think it's for some material purpose. Of course, if you're going to preach, that's another thing. Why do you needlessly suffer the torment of blaspheming the devotees of Lord Hari, attempting to achieve their eminence, thereby only proving your own fruitless foolishness? The desire for spiritual eminence is easily fulfilled when one becomes a devotee of the Lord, for eternal fame automatically follows the heels of a Vaishnava, and that fame is never to be considered a temporary worldly opulence. So if you want fame, you can be a real devotee. Of course, then you'll lose your desire for fame. Next, we have a lot of prayers, right, isn't it? We pray to the devotee to please fulfill all of our desires. But I think, just like in the Tulsi prayer, it says, you know, please fulfill my desire, basically. So, what is that desire? Then right after it says, my desire is to be a resident of Vrindavan, basically. Same thing in the Guru Puja song, Asha, my prayer, my desire, my hope. I should be fixed, you know, the spiritual master can fulfill all desires, all my hopes. And then right after that, it says, my only hope is to be fixed in the words of my spiritual master. So it's like we're being told that Krishna will fulfill all desires, but this is the only desire you should have. to serve the lotus feet of the guru and the Lord's devotees. The relationship between a devotee and Lord Hari is devoid of even a trace of worldly illusion. It has nothing to do with the materialistic cheating propensity. The prestige of so-called popularity in the material realm is compared to a treacherous dog-eating witch. Now, here we have another nice analogy. Not just a witch, she's a witch who eats dogs. And the attempt, I think, actually I looked it up, it's something like chandala, I forget the other word was. And the attempt to live in solitude is supposedly engaged in unalloyed The attempt to live in solitude, to supposedly engage in unalloyed bhajans, is compared to an entangling network of distraction. Well, I can relate to that. Network of distraction. So hard to concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Please know that anyone striving in either of these waves verily lives in the hell of Maya's illusion. Quote, I shall give up chanting the Lord's name publicly in kirtan and retire to solitude, thus smearing myself with worldly honor. Dear mine, what is the good of seeking such so-called glory? I will always remind you that the great soul Madhavendra Puri never deceived himself in that regard by committing theft in his own storehouse of perception, the way you do. Committing theft in his own storehouse of perception. Reminds me of another one of Prabhupada's colorful sayings. I think it's in his Vrindavan Bhajan, where he talks about mental speculators, and he says, those who are used to eating the mind's bananas. We're like monkeys eating the mind's bananas. The nonsense the mind is supplying. Your reputation is equal to the stool of a hog. An ordinary ambitious man like you can never be equaled with a devotee of Madhavendra Puri's eminence. Under the sway of envy, you have drowned yourself in the filthy waters of material enjoyment after having abandoned the excellent perfection of congregational kirtan. So he's not decrying chanting, but of course he wants congregational chanting of the holy name. Don't hide away and chant just for yourself, but go out, chant for others' benefit. Truly, O wicked mind, the glories of so-called solitary worship are propagated only by false yogis using unscrupulous means to deceive others. To save yourself from these pitfalls, please contemplate the instructions that the Supreme Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kindly gave us while addressing Srila Sanatan Goswami with the utmost care. Do not forget for a moment the two most valuable concepts that he taught. So here you go, the two most valuable concepts taught by Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami. One, the principle of dry, apparent renunciation as opposed to real, appropriate renunciation. So Yukta Vairagya, one of the principal teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And the principle of a soul being trapped in the bondage of matter as opposed to a soul who is liberated. So these are two completely different things. And people can't distinguish the two. We know how Prabhupada would get criticized sometimes for doing business and so on. But he was doing his business for Krishna. They weren't seeing a liberated soul. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking that these conflicting concepts are on the same level. Please remember this while engaging yourself in chanting the holy names as loud as you possibly can. It's always, you know, there's this line, I was going to look it up, but I forgot, where Prabhupada says, a devotee should chant loudly enough that he can hear himself and others. I'm pretty sure that's how the sentence goes. I never could figure out what that means exactly. Hear yourself, okay, but you're supposed to hear others at the same time? So I was thinking maybe it was an incomplete thought. It's supposed to be an ellipsis. And others can hear you, maybe. I've always thought. Never quite sure what exactly probably meant like that. But for one thing, we're supposed to hear ourselves, that's for sure. And when you chant in the street, others should hear. I was thinking, sometimes I hear others and I think, where's the Maha Mantra? I'm not hearing the Maha Mantra. Of course, my hearing's going, so maybe that. But I think sometimes devotees don't say the mantra distinctly. So you can't hear correctly if you don't say it distinctly. It starts with chanting it distinctly if you want to hear it clearly. So let's see. Okay. Did I read this? Oh, truly, O wicked mind, the glories of so-called solitary worship are propagated only by false yogis using unscrupulous means to deceive others. To save yourself from these pitfalls, please contemplate the instructions that the Supreme Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu kindly gave us while addressing. Oh, I'm sorry, I just read that one and the next one. Okay, we're up to number 11. One is truly a Vaishnava who has given up the habit of falling victim to the ferocious tigress of wealth, beauty, and fame. Such a soul is factually detached from material life and is known as a pure devotee. So if you've given up the habit of falling victim to wealth, beauty, and fame. Narada Muni said wealth is the worst because it corrupts you the most, because it gives you access to all the others. Someone with this consciousness of detachment has thereby become victorious over the mundane world of birth and death. One is indeed detached from who moderately partakes of worldly things that are deemed necessary for living in devotional service. A devotee acting in that manner does not fall prey to the disease of material infatuation. So again, you get this idea that they're so-called yogis, Vairagis, they're living just like these Naga Babas. They go, you know, they come to Kumbh Mela, they're all naked. They get the honor of taking the first bath, actually. I think a couple of years ago, it was a big battle between them. But sometimes they carry tridents, they're covered with ashes, they're completely naked. So people may think, oh, they're so advanced. You know, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati is saying, don't judge by that. That's not, real renunciation is to live, take what you need. One is indeed detached who moderately partakes of worldly things that are deemed necessary for living in devotional service. That's the principle. You take what you need to engage in devotional service. Thus devoid of selfish attachment and endowed with the ability to see things in relation to the Lord, one directly perceives all sense objects as being Lord Madhava himself. Imagine, huh? Everything you see, which is a sense object, obviously, you see in Krishna everywhere. Now we're up to 13, again there's 19. This is the standard of befitting renunciation. And one who realizes this is most fortunate indeed. Everything involved in such a devotee's life represents Lord Hari's personal spiritual opulence as manifest in the world of matter. Everything a devotee has, if he's engaged in devotional service, is Krishna's personal spiritual opulence in the material world. On the other hand, one who engages in chanting the Lord's name with hopes of enhancing his own material reputation finds that all his activities and paraphernalia represent only the riches of hypocrisy. O mind, please reject the company of two types of persons, those desiring impersonal liberation from the material world, and those who desire to enjoy the pleasure of material sense objects. Both of these are equally non-devotees. The things that are used in relation to Lord Krishna are objects belonging directly to the transcendental realm, and thus, having nothing to do with matter, they cannot be either owned or forsaken by persons interested in mundane enjoyment and renunciation. So again, this is the principle. It's all Krishna's, so you can't enjoy it and you can't renounce it either. So you have these two people, the material enjoyers and the so-called renunciants. They're both an illusion because they're not seeing it as Krishna's property. An impersonal philosopher is opposed to thinking of Krishna as an object of devotion, and thus being puffed up with the false pride of imaginary liberation, he dares to criticize the true devotees of the Lord. O mind, you are the servant of the Vaishnavas, and you should always hope for attaining devotion. Why then do you make such a loud commotion by calling to me and trying to prove the supposed supremacy of your practice of solitary worship. So the mind is making a loud commotion. You should go in some solitary place and chant and become famous. One who falsely gives up things that could actually be used in the Lord's service profoundly calls himself a renunciate. But unfortunately, he can never become a Vaishnava by such an attitude. Abandoning his servitorship to the lotus feet of Lord Hari and resigning himself to his solitary home, whatever is gained by that exercise can only be the worthless treasure of deception. Ever engage yourself in the service of Sri Radha and keep aloof from the vicious snake of materialistic sense gratification. The glory of participating in the Lord's kirtan is not meant to bolster anyone's ambitions for personal recognition. O mind, why then have you abandoned the identity of being Radha's eternal servant in favor of retiring to a solitary place to practice the cheating process of so-called bhajan? The most valuable treasures amongst the Lord's preachers are the eternal personalities themselves. The Brajvasis are truly infused with life, and therefore they preach in order to give life to the walking corpses of the mundane world. So you can, this of course, you can infer from this, he's talking about Brajvasis means pure devotees who are eternal residents of Vrindavan, whether they're living there or not. They're actually the real Brajvasis. And they desire to preach. There's one lecture where Prabhupada said, the greatest expression of prema is preaching. Because the devotee wants to connect others, but loves Krishna so much that he can't help but preach. He wants to bring everyone to Krishna. Oh, look, this is my Krishna. Come, come. Because of his intense love. So they're preaching to the walking corpses of the mundane world. All the songs that the Brajvasis sing about the glories of Lord Krishna are devoid of any tinge of desire for fame. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, so this is how he finishes his song, of course, he names himself. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, servant of Radha and her beloved Krishna, always hopes for kirtan, and he begs all to loudly sing the names of Lord Hari. The transcendental power of congregational chanting automatically awakens remembrance of the Lord and his divine pastimes in relation to one's own eternal spiritual form. So this is quite a benediction, isn't it? The transcendental power of congregational chanting automatically awakens remembrance of the Lord and his divine pastimes in relation to one's own eternal spiritual form. In other words, you'll get your swarup by congregational chanting. You'll enter into your relationship with Krishna. It will all be revealed. I always think that we don't do a lot of it, do we? Devotees used to go out in the early days, all day long, chanting in the streets. Especially if you don't come to the temple, then probably not a lot of congregational chanting going on. But we do it every day, of course, in the temple for some time, and we do it at least once a week. We go out on the street to do it. So especially, so this is, of course, this is another theme of this song, is that, yes, we want chanting, but congregational chanting. Sankirtan. Sankirtan is more glorious. Of course, Haridas Thakur said it's more glorious because other living entities get to hear. But it's also glorious for ourselves, because it's recommended by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So after one awakens remembrance of the Lord and his divine pastimes in relation to one's own spiritual form, only at that time does it become possible to go off to a solitary place and engage in the confidential worship of their lordship. So that's when you can do it, when you've realized your eternal relationship with Krishna. Because somebody might think, oh, he's criticizing his guru because his guru was doing nirjan bhajan. But of course, his guru was in this position. He has realized his relationship with Krishna. So it's okay for him to perform nirjan bhajan. But for us who are trying to progress to that elevated stage, then it's just a kind of cheating. Dushtamam tumikishayar Vaishnava. So I'll stop here. Anyone like to discuss anything? We can discuss other topics about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur if you'd like, or any questions about this. Dhanashtami Prabhu?
A few questions. You were saying in the first shloka of Shashastakam, there are how many benedictions and what are they
seven.
Called? And what did you call them?
Flames. Here it was called
flames?
The seven tongue. Flame. FLAME.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And there it's tongue?
Tongue, but I think the idea is basically the same because the flame is like a tongue of the fire. So the basic
tongue
idea
is in your mouth.
Yeah, the tongue in your mouth. Yeah.
So that was one thing. And what was the context of that?
The context here?
Yeah, that you were...
Well, it was mentioned here, but I don't know. I have to look it up.
Okay.
It was in one of these verses. I think it was an early one. I don't know if I could find it.
Anyway, you can give me that later.
Yeah.
The other point is that I was always under the understanding, you were referring to it as a superstition that one shouldn't cross the ocean.
Uh-huh.
But isn't it? I think it's a Shastric reference. That's what I always understood.
I'm trying to remember where I read it, and I came up with that phrase. It was a superstition. It may have been in the Leelamrita. I don't remember where I read it.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there's... Of course, there could be. The Vedas, they have all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Just like there are Puranas, that one promotes Ganesha's God, and one promotes Shiva's God, and so on. So it's the desire tree. So whatever desire you have, you can find a fruit to fulfill that desire in the tree of the Vedas. So there may be some statement like that in the Vedas. But you have to, that's why, to study the Vedas, you have to have guidance. You have to know, you have to be able to see things in context, you have to weigh the relative value of different statements and so on. So that may be there, that statement. But just like there's, Prabhupada himself would quote that verse of the things that are forbidden in Kali Yuga, and one is to take sannyas. But he took sannyas, he gave sannyas. So he said, well, this is not for the preacher. So, in other words, context is important. Who is this instruction for? It's for certain people. Prabhupada would say maybe like rascal sannyasis or rascal babajis and so on. That then it's not, they shouldn't be doing what they're doing, which is, of course, in line with this song that we're reading today. So whether it's there or not, I don't know. But even if it is, there are higher instructions.
Just one last point. You were speaking about how Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, there was an attempt to drag him through the streets. Can you refresh our memories on that?
Well, it was when he passed away. He had given that, made that statement. I don't know if it was written, but it's somehow or other. He had, of course, it was in his bhava. He said, when I die, I want my body to be dragged through the streets of Navadweep and, eaten by dog, whatever, because it's so horrible and I'm so horrible and so on. So there were some Babajis who said, look, this is what he asked for. This is his last request. So we should do this. And that, if I remember correctly, that's when Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, actually, I'm his only disciple. And that's when he called them out. He said, any of you who have not, had illicit relations with women in the last 6 months, and then he kept going down to one day, and they all left. So none of them were real Babajis. So yeah, that was what that was about. That's real super belief.
Well, two quick points. One.
Where's the microphone?
The principal meaning of Madhava means one who has the quality of madhu or madhava, honey.
Yeah.
Just like the first A is long or short. Like Vasudev is Krishna's father, V, short A. Vasudev is Krishna, V, long A. Vasudev who comes from Vasudev.
Yeah.
So Madhava means he is Lord of sweetness, comes from Madhu or Madha.
Yeah, that's the principle in the sense of the most rustic understanding. But of course, these names can be interpreted in different ways. And I definitely saw, and I think it was in Jiva Goswami.
I haven't heard that Lakshmi one. Where did you hear that?
I've read it also.
I'm pretty sure it's in the Sundarbhas, one of the Sundarbhas.
Oh, Sundarbhas. Okay.
Sure.
Second point, and I shouldn't say it, but I worked really hard to produce that translation.
Oh, this is your translation.
Even though the publishers...
Jai, Haribo.
The publishers removed the person who did it, but maybe they got it off the internet and they didn't know. So,
yeah.
Whatever.
I know, that's the way it works all over the place. Like in BTG, sometimes we quote things, but we don't know who did the translation. I like to give credit, but usually a lot of times you can't find the translation.
But I use the principle of bhav anuvad, where you look at each point and fluff it out a little and put it in English so that it really, really forms a rounded explanation of each point. So we worked really hard on that.
Yeah, thank you. Actually, I was appreciating that because sometimes the verse, the Bengali is only two or three words, where the translation may be a sentence or two. So he's expanded, so you can understand. Of course, it's like you can say the song is like sutras, so they can be puffed out. It's like puffing out cotton, you know. So I think he did an excellent job, very beautiful translation.
Yeah. You got to fluff it out, because the opposite is called akshar anuvad, which is literal translation of the words. Mm-hmm. Like when scholars translate Goswami's books, it's really dry. Yeah. Because they're doing akshar anuvad. But what in our line, Srila Prabhupada was the master of bhav anuvad. Yeah. Sometimes it's the Bhagavatam shlok, same four little lines, but big, big translation.
Yeah.
Because he's snuffing it out. It's called bhav anuvad, getting the mood.
Thank you. Ganga Narayan, Prabhu? Ganga Narayan, he's right there.
As far as chanting in a secluded place, such as chanting japa, isn't it better if devotees are talking different things during japa period or looking at their cell phones? Or
yeah, I don't take this as a condemnation of if devotees want to chant, you know, in their own homes rather than coming to the temple, or they like to chant by themselves. I myself do that, so maybe it's wrong because I do it, but I don't think that's really the point of what's being discussed here. He's really criticizing, you know, those who are, they're not really qualified. You know, they actually go, they reject the world, so-called, but they're thinking, oh, I'll be thought of as a great saint because I'm here chanting. But whatever, our point is we want to hear the holy name and we want to chant with devotion and so on, so whatever helps us do that, that's fine.
These, what I would say, Manashiksha instructions that you were reading, I'm just wondering how we apply that in our lives. Is it something that we carry with us or we use for preaching? Because if we try to apply that in preaching in a sense, that it will be hard to bring someone to Krishna consciousness. So are these just moods that a devotee should carry?
Yeah, I thought of that when I first was looking for something to read, and I thought, well, this is about, you know, he's preaching about some particular people, have nothing to do with us, really. But I think there are lots of lessons in this song that apply to us. And of course, the main theme of it, don't be a hypocrite, don't try to be famous. Now, we can also think, well, I'll be famous if I'm a great kirtan leader. Everybody will think, oh, this person seems so nice, or whatever, or giving class, or whatever we do, how wonderfully I dress the deities, or whatever. Of course, as neophytes, we kind of need that, you might say. We need some encouragement. I heard in the early days in the Gurukul in Dallas, devotees had this question, you know, because fame, we're not supposed to want fame, so how to do it with children? So devotees were thinking, you know, should we not praise the children when they do good? And Prabhupada said, no, you should, you have to encourage them. So we're all spiritual children, so we need encouragement. But still, for our own internal meditation and so on, we should not strive for that, and if that thought is there, oh, you know, I'll become famous or whatever, then that's not a good thing. That's a kind of contamination. So I think that principle runs through this, even though it was addressed specifically to a certain kind of people, it also applies to us. That pratishtasha, the desire for position or fame and so on, it's one of the dirty things in the heart that we have to get rid of. All right, I'd like to stop. It's 9 o'clock. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur ki jai.